Corsican Brothers, from the novel by Alexandre Dumas. After the near tragedy in the De Franchi home, when Madame De Franchi shoots Marianne, who twice has come to the front door asking to see Lucien, there is at last a reconciliation. Madame is made to understand that Lucien and Marianne are overwhelmingly in love. We find Madame kneeling by Marianne's bedside, a strange sight indeed, as until this moment Madame has professed the most torrid hate for this beautiful member of the Gattici family. Marianne, whose life is now out of danger, has her hand clasped in that of Madame, while Lucien stands by.
I will atone, Marianne. I promise you.
There is no need. It is the way of destiny. It was meant that you should live. Even when I pointed the gun at you, fired at so close a range, it was meant that your life should be spared. You are out of danger.
Yes, Madame.
Only half an inch, Mother. Half an inch nearer the heart, and Marianne would have died. Dr. Curé was quite sure of that.
Half an inch. Marianne, is it not strange? The slight frail threads of destiny, of fate, of whatever other name we may call it, that binds us to this world. Death is near us always in some form. Disease, misadventure, and yet we escape it because our destiny has arranged otherwise.
Then you believe in destiny, Madame?
Yes.
Then you must believe, Mother, that Marianne and I were intended for each other.
I do now. But what is more important, Lucien, I know that Marianne loves you. Yet to me it is so strange. Is it not true, Marianne, that you swore never to rest until we as a family had been wiped from Corsica?
Yes, but please be understanding, Madame. Remember that as a child I was taught to hate the name De Franchi. My father is a bitter man. Even now he turned me from my house because he knows I love a De Franchi.
That is the proof, Marianne. You have sacrificed everything, risked your life.
I was so unhappy, Madame. I would not have cared if I had died. But now that I know that between Lucien and I, love emerged, everything in life is possible, I am happy, truly happy.
As I said before, I shall atone for what I have done, my daughter.
So we leave Marianne Gattici and her happiness. A happiness which as yet she cannot fully realize, since she is still very weak from loss of blood. But Dr. Curé has said that she is out of danger. So now it is but a matter of time when she will rebuild her strength for the new life that is to come. So let us leave Lucien and Marianne and the twin brother Louis and travel across the Mediterranean once again to the Latouche household, where the beautiful Emilie, strangely enough, is thinking about the man to whom she was once betrothed, Louis de Franchi. But her thoughts are bitter. There is resentment, even hate in her tones, as she speaks of Louis to her cousin, Annette.
It's something I'll never forget, Annette. The greatest insult a man could heap upon a woman.
Oh, a woman? But you're not a woman. Not yet, Emilie. In fact, I don't think you'll ever grow up.
You seem to forget that I'm married, Annette. That I'm Madame Chateau Renaud.
All the same, you'll never grow up. The excitement you show when you see a new hat or a new gown.
I aged when Louis de Franchi insulted me, before my mother and father. Their attitude towards me has been different ever since.
Well, after all, when a parent finds out that his daughter is secretly meeting an old lover while her husband is away...
Stop it, Annette. Don't talk of it ever again. Paul is coming back any day now, and I want it forgotten. I don't want Louis' name mentioned ever again.
Why be angry with me? It was not my fault, Emilie.
I hate him.
Exactly what he wants you to do. He wanted to hurt you, Emilie, and he succeeded. I can't understand why you were so foolish,
nor can I. I've been trying to search myself, trying to find out what it was that attracted me to Louis when I met him again. Anyhow, I want to forget him altogether. Paul will be back, and there'll be so much to do, a house to find, and so much to arrange, and he must never know, you understand, Annette. One syllable from you about Louis and what he did to me, and I'll never forgive you. Never.
Of course I won't tell.
If he ever found out...
Not possible. Naturally, you and your father would never speak of it, and you can trust me. I might be a little envious of you at times, Amelie, but I'm fond of you in a strange way. You're like a spoiled sister to me.
I haven't been very nice to you, have I? Perhaps I'm selfish, Annette. But it's better to be selfish and know it, and selfish than not know it. I want what I like, and I usually get what I want.
And now, with your husband coming home, you'll have dozens of new gowns and be the talk of Paris. Oh, Amelie, if only I had half your luck.
Good morning, Lucien.
Ah, good morning, Pierre. I heard some very disquieting news this morning.
Oh, what was it?
You're soon to leave us.
Good things can't go on forever. I've collected all the material I want about Corsica Lucien, and I have my job to do in France. Also, I've just received a letter from Prosper Mérimée. His publishers have a new book, Carmen, which he's written, and he wants me to be in Paris when the first edition comes out.
You and Monsieur Mérimée are great friends.
Birds of a feather and authors keep together.
Will you write a story of Corsica?
Yes. But the story I write could never be the story that's been unfolded before my eyes, Lucien. The story of two Corsican brothers. The strangest, most extraordinary story that could ever have been conceived.
Perhaps a little exaggeration if you were to put it before your readers, the affinity between my twin and myself.
No, Lucien. Yours is a much closer bond than most, but that's because you had to be separated at birth. You were as one. Perhaps. You have one soul. At the same time, I've known other twins who had between them a kind of thought transmission. Pain in one reacts on the other, and joy in one uplifts the other.
Well, I'm happy to say that Louis is looking a little better.
Yes, but Dr. Curé says it takes time. He's still very weak, and even though he sits in the garden, it'll be many months before he's able to enjoy life once again.
And even then, he will be an invalid. But it all began when this dastardly girl in Paris broke his heart. Still, she got a little of her deserts.
Lucien, you never spoke much about Paris. Exactly what did you do that hurt her so much? Oh, tell me, please. When I go back to Paris, I shall probably meet this girl again. You humiliated her, I know that.
In a way, that hurts a woman most. To lead her on, to pretend you love her, and then to turn her aside. That's exactly what she did to my brother, so I returned the compliment.
And she actually thought that you were Louis?
She did.
A great shock. And a great hurt, too, for any woman who has any pride. But those things pass, Lucien, especially with a woman of that type. She'll forget all about it in less than a month. What are you laughing at?
My vengeance is not quite complete.
What do you mean?
There's more to come. When or where it will happen, I don't know exactly. But I can assure you, Pierre, that there is a great deal more to come.
Oh, Annette, my heart is fluttering so quickly, I can hardly take hold of my breath.
You should be here at any moment now.
Do I really look my best today?
And really, I've told you 100 times. I've never seen you look more beautiful. Blue suits you. It deepens the color of your eyes, brings out the creaminess of your skin. And with those little black bows, hundreds and hundreds of them, fastened over your crinoline, you look enchanting. Really, you do.
I want to thrill Paul. I want to make him feel that every time he sees me, he can congratulate himself on being so lucky.
Emily?
Yes?
You don't love Paul.
How do you know?
I don't think you could love anyone, really.
Paul has promised me everything in the world. You know what happened 3 days ago? Papa received an enormous sum of money, just so that Paul and I could have a place to live in when he is here. Papa has forgotten all about Louis now. He thinks Paul is the best choice I could possibly have made. Listen, a carriage. Perhaps this is Monsieur Chateau Renaud now. Oh, look, Emily. It is he, stepping out of the carriage now. Oh, Emily, he's handsome. Isn't he handsome? And why? What's the matter with him?
He's scowling. Perhaps the coachman was late. Perhaps... Oh, but there he is. I shall stand here in it, here by the window with the sunshine on my hair. The first picture is so important when a husband comes home.
You love yourself, Emily. I've guessed at last. That is your true love.
Paul, darling.
Oh, you.
Yes, Monsieur Chateau Renaud, but I'm not staying. You and Emily, you've not seen each other for so long. But welcome to Paris, Monsieur.
Get out of here.
What?
Get out of here. I want to talk with my wife, alone.
Yes, Monsieur.
Paul, what are you saying? Go, Emily, leave us. Annette is my cousin, Paul. To talk to her like that. She's not a servant.
I'm not interested in her. The question is, what are you?
Me?
I would kindly ask you to give me some explanation regarding this letter which was waiting for me when I returned.
To Monsieur Chateau Renaud, if you value your future happiness, you will question your wife's movements on a certain night not long ago. And she came to my apartment ready to renew a love which was known between us only when we were betrothed. Like the winter's wind, she is changeable. Very changeable. And also, like the winter's wind, I think you might find that her love is cold. Such.
Yes. And I must ask you to explain the meaning of this letter, Emily. At once.
Emilia's hands trembled, and the letter fluttered from her fingers, glittering as it passed through a shaft of sunlight from the window. Her face drained of all color, she faced her husband. How will she explain this damning evidence of her insincerity? Make sure you hear the next enthralling episode of The Corsican Brothers.